Treble season is upon us, guys. And on today's episode of the Jersey Wall Podcast, we're going to preview the missing piece for Man City or for Inter. On today's episode of the Jersey Wall Podcast, we preview the Champions League final. Enjoy. One minute, start the clock. The preview's underway. 60 seconds to describe how we got here today. Lady Narrative had her wish, gave us Goliath versus David, a juggernaut and mighty soldier. What awaits is the elated. Inter topped Barca to finish second within the groups, leading to a classic TJW error. My bad, guys. Oops. After the draw, they ended on the good side of the bracket, where the pork chops and Milanistas simply couldn't hack it. And for City, they flew through, having never tasted defeat, mauling everyone in their path. Shark teams got to eat, thumping Bayern and Madrid, showing naysayers the door, proving this isn't a new ceiling, this is the new floor. Regardless of the outcome, both sides will go home, one kings of Europe sitting atop their throne, the other with nothing but a loser's medallion. Who will comfort Lukaku? Maybe Megan Thee Stallion. Entangled in the web of life and destiny is the guaranteed assurance that we're where we're supposed to be. This inevitable collision will spell glory and doom. An epic final lies ahead. Here we go. Boom.
I was wondering why you said medallion.
I had to find something that rhymed, one that came to me in my sleep last night, guys.
He will be comforted. He will be comforted for sure.
That's exactly it. I told Vina before we started, hilarious. I was like, dude, I had to start this like later than I usually do with these. And I woke up with this line in my head and I'm like, oh, I got it. I have to figure a way to incorporate this tidbit of topical information, where apparently Lukaku is now Twitter FC taken over from a new market. It's all just a brand play, guys. Welcome to episode.
They're putting him in the GOAT debate, Nathan.
I know they are, Mina.
It's they're the putting US him in the we're GOAT part debate.
Of that. They think we do that, so I had to humble him a little bit in the poem, guys. Welcome to episode number 197 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. Today is the Champions League final preview. As always, I'm your host, Mr. Nathan Sanchez. So with me, I got Mina. Brethren, we had to run through that one a few times. I think the new setup is messing me up a little bit here because There's a lot going on. I have a corner desk now, which means I have lights coming from more places. I have a big screen ahead of me. There's reflection on the thing. I had a typo.
The lights are getting hot, man.
That's just it, man. When the lights are brightest, we're getting closest to 200.
It's the reflection off that Vasco da Gama shit.
Yeah. In the back. Well, that's the backlight because that thing is absolutely stunning, which I put behind me just to light up the behind so that the stream looks absolutely incredible. Guys, welcome to today's episode. It's just the two of us today, as our favorite song tends to go that we sing every time. It's just the two of us. Good thing I got something really special in store for episode 200 because I'm not going to have to recite the poem and I'll just leave it at that because that'll be the little Easter egg ahead of the 3 weeks from now, which you could expect. Guys, Man City are on the cusp of a treble. Inter on the cusp of a treble. And there's a long way to go ahead of that, right? There is a massive narrative. There's a story arc. There's things to be discussed before we go into Saturday's final. Because City just won one final. They got another one on the prowl. And even though it seems like an overwhelming City dub and a lot of people will not give Inter the respect they deserve, Inter have earned respect. And I'm here to say that as the opposition who will face them in the final. It's like, no, hold on. At one time in the year when we were previewing this, like I said, TJW gave the whoops. I was like, Inter are not a serious threat in that group. Mm-hmm. Get the hell out of here. Only Inter fans will say that Inter are a serious threat in that group because at the time they weren't supposed to be. And Barca had a little bit of a conundrum in Europe. It gave Inter the perfect opportunity to finish second, ended up on the side of the bracket that probably favored them more so because if they had to draw against Bayern
even then,
again,
they were not favorites to reach the final.
They wouldn't. No, and that's just it, right? So they dispatched the competition that they had in front of them, but we here were very disrespectful to Inter, right? Every step of the way, I was like, Porto are better than them. Porto are going to beat them. And Porto almost did, and it didn't happen. Then I'm like, okay, but Benfica, this is their run. I've been saying this since August. Benfica are going to emulate that Ajax-esque run, and there's very little that anybody else could do to stop it until they face an absolute monumental
Milan repeated the most informed team in Europe. They're going to steamroll this Inter Milan side, and then they didn't.
That's just it. So every step of the way, Inter had answers to the questions that were asked to them. Is this going to be a repeat of that scenario? Well, let's get right into it. Guys, there are keys to victory for each side that they have to consider ahead of the final. First and foremost, we have to preview how each side got here. We did a little bit in the poem and in the things leading up to it. But I think it would be disrespectful to a Champions League campaign to just start in the final. We got to go back. We got to look back on how each team reached this far. Then we can talk all about the keys to victory in the game and questions that we have ahead of the final. Are you ready, brethren?
I am so ready right now.
I'm so GD excited. I can't wait to get started. Let's start with Inter, because in many ways it feels like, listen, both sides are challengers fighting for a vacant title, right? Man City knocked out the reigning champs. The momentum is with City. City are on the cusp of a treble in the largely most difficult league in the world, right? Having won the FA Cup, fine. Having won the Premier League when it didn't seem like they were going to for a long stretch of the season. And then City had back and forth moments leading into this Champions League campaign, but I want to put a pin in them because they seem like the overwhelming favorites. The underdogs go first in the Nate Santos, you know, lay of the land here. Mina, why was I so wrong about Inter? Why have we written them off every step of the way? Why? Why do we do that? Why do we give them credit?
I think we looked at Inter and we were like, I don't know. Like, no one likes Inter unless you're an Inter fan. And that sounds weird to say, but no one looks at Inter and they're like, yeah, you know what? I like me a little bit of Inter Milan. No one does that. I think it's because it's the evil of, you know, how people think about Lukaku in the league that we watch.
Yeah.
So his I guess storyline has been reaching this arc, but he had to do something crazy in order to get to this Inter Milan side to go back to this Inter Milan side. So I think everybody that watches the Premier League is kind of like, I'm not a big fan of Lukaku. He's been trash and he talks a lot for someone who, you know, puts a bad touch into the third row. And then you look at Lautaro Martinez and how he ended the World Cup with just trying to let France win everything in the final. Literally the amount of chances he missed. So he's not really someone that's looked at favorably in the football world because, you know, it started to get that Higuain arc of the story. And I think just people prefer AC Milan. I don't know what it is, but is it just me or does Inter seem to have like this villain energy?
Yeah, I think I was talking to somebody yesterday about, you know, just kind of looking ahead to the final and I'm like, it feels like City are kind of the heels because they seem inevitable. So the bad guys are now the underdogs, which makes them more favorable. Like people like them and they want to cheer for them a little bit more, which is a weird spot for them. Cause I agree with you. I don't know how much it has to do with Lukaku. I think it stems long before Lukaku. I think AC Milan developed such a fan base and this was the opposition of that fan base. And so therefore they became heels many, many years ago. Then you had the most charismatic villain in the history of the sport in Jose Mourinho, who just went, yeah, bro, we're going to overachieve with
this.
You
know what?
And then it became like he made them one of his sides. And those Mourinho sides are always villains. Always, always, always.
Is that why Porto is also looked like that? Or looked at like that in Portugal?
Probably. Well, I mean, the allegiances are very divided in Portugal, but I think that Mourinho has a big part of that because you think of who he's managed.
It's the
people
mentality.
Hate the teams that he's managed. Yeah. Everybody hates this team. Like, unless you're part of that fan base, let's look at neutrality. Let's look at it. Does anybody like Porto? Not really, right? Like, Porto are kind of
Roma's the first team where people are like willing to back with Mourinho.
Well, he's faced now. Now he's an old man. People are like, okay, like the villain was that was the part of his career. Mourinho is just kind of like, listen, I'm here. But let's look at the teams he's managed, right? Porto, nope. Inter, nope. Don't think that they're looked at very favorably. Chelsea admit that they're villains. They like being villains. United are the biggest juggernaut on planet Earth. You got more haters than anybody because you have so many fans who annoy people. Madrid, same thing.
Madrid,
who are 100%. Absolute heels, right? Spurs,
nobody
who likes Spurs. That's just, you know, he had to perform some
Spurs
serious heat to try
that
to get people
like
care about them.
That's how much hate they have. They're just like, why couldn't I just fall in love with someone else? They watch Modric and Berbatov and Bale light it up, Michael Carrick, and they just fell in love and they're like, ooh, I like me some of that. And they had no idea Victor Wanyama was in their future.
Dude, forget that.
I don't know why Wanyama is the one
Dyer.
That stuck in my head.
I would say Victor Wanyama is probably the most like friendly dude that they had.
I know.
Time.
I don't know why
Eric
Dyer
is the
guy
the
that got stuck in my head. Juan Foyt is in their future.
Yeah, dude, you're just looking at, I imagine Victor Wanyama playing for Montreal Impact, listening to this podcast.
He's like, why am I
listening to it, being like, hey, bro, what did I do? I didn't
you
do a damn thing.
The guy that got yelled at when he was in the back seat. He's like, well, I'm not even in the front row. What are you talking to me for?
Or 50 Cent when Flo, like his beef
Sorry,
with Floyd Mayweather.
It's all love.
Where they just went there. What do you say F me for? I didn't do it, anything, man. It all stems with Mourinho. Mourinho has that cult following where he just says, like, I need villains on the pitch. And so he kind of garners that hatred. But anyway, Inter have, for a long time, I think, held that reputation. And I would love to talk to a Serie A expert who doesn't outright hate Inter to know if that's true. But to be honest, everyone who I've spoken to, they're fans of Juve, they're fans of Milan, they hate Inter. So I won't get objective analysis here because nobody seems to like them. But now they're the underdogs, and underdogs tend to get followers and love and admiration because it's more fun to cheer for David than it is Goliath, because Goliath seems inevitable. It seems like it's not going to happen. Also, David, though, well, that is it. And that, though, we look at Champions League history, Inter have won this competition before. Man City haven't. Man City are just super, super talented. People are like, oh, this is it. But that
yeah, doesn't they've necessarily... already done the treble. That's, and now it's like the second one that they could do. Mad.
They're going for a different one. It's crazy. Anyway, so the reason that we disrespected them is probably because we didn't rate Inzaghi as a manager. I think that none of us really know how good he is. I think after he replaced Conte, he's done fantastic. But no one can tell you that's a really good manager. We're all just like, yeah, okay.
We're just like, how's he doing this? Is it him?
Is it him? Is it the squad? Because I can kind of go through what the last few years have looked like. Because
he strikes me like a mafia boss, 100%.
I wonder, well, before this, he was at Lazio, right? And then once Conte left, they were like, okay, let's go get him because he also plays a back three. That was literally the board line of logic. Oh, Serie A plays a back three, manages a club in the top half. That's our guy. And the one year it was the Lukaku and Lautaro show, right? Lukaku moved, didn't do a damn thing. Inter were just like, just kind of chilling. Then he came back and he's like, yo, let's actually change it up. I actually like the Correa and Lukaku partnership better nowadays. And I like the Lautaro and Dzeko partnership. And that's working very, very, very well. Now, the reason that I think we didn't give them credit is because Barca, what they did domestically this year, commanded a lot of respect. And Bayern Munich have absolute undisputed quality in the Champions League that no one can refute. So you look at it and go, Inter are probably the third best team in the group.
Right.
Then they edge Barca, but it seemed like a Barca implosion. It didn't seem like we could give Inter credit because Inter won the away game, or the game, I guess, in Milan. So we went, Barca, what are you doing? And then in the return leg, it's 3-3, and you go, Barca, what are you doing? Figure this out. So it seemed like it was the Barca story, not the Inter story. Then they drew Porto, which doesn't draw a whole lot of attention. But Porto, like I said a couple weeks ago, only Mourinho lost classical. Once since October. Yeah, the Jose Mourinho derby. Only lost once since October, and they're so hard to score against. We go, yeah, they probably have it. And then Inter edged them. And they come up against Benfica, and Benfica are exciting and attractive and like playing really, really good football. You go, Benfica probably have this. And every step of the way, Inter were marginally better. Inter were never behind, which means that it was just Benfica playing catch-up. It took away a lot of the excitement of the fixture. Then in the Milan derby, they went full heel, and they beat the team that everybody wanted to see reach the final, which was AC Milan. And so every step of the way, we're like, damn, they don't have a chance. And now they reach the final, having defeated time and time and time and time and time again. The only outright one that they should have lost and did was against Bayern. Every other step of the way, they figured it out. And now they're in a final.
That it still feels like they don't deserve it. You know what I mean?
Right. And we look at them like, oh, they still don't have a chance. Bro, we've been saying that for months now. When are we going to give them the respect that they deserve?
Yeah, I don't know. I think now is the time that people are going to go on the Inter train because I think people would rather see Inter win the Champions League than City win the Champions League. And I know that you're aware of this. So, I don't know. I think now is the time that Inter is going to have a lot of fans on them. And the wrong kind of fixture to start backing Inter, because if you want Inter to give you happiness against the City team, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out. But that's why we're here. That's the whole purpose of today.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And so that kind of takes us through Inter's story up to this point and how they found their way here. I think we should do the same for Man City before we get to the final of it all.
Let's do it.
City's identity changed many, many, many times this year, right? We saw this. We saw it in real time. We saw it before the World Cup. We saw them smash teams at home. We saw them go away and just draw. It didn't look like they were really turning up. Yep. And there was a few times when I looked at it and went, yeah, I don't think City are going to win it this year, because as talented as they are, like, look, they're not turning it on when they need to. And then there was a bit of that. We kind of discussed this on previous weeks here on the podcast. They edged Cancelo out. The system was shifted. It was more left side heavy than right side heavy, or rather it changed to right side heavy because it was so left side dominant for so long. Then Haaland went cold, and then he picked up form again. And then John Stones walked into the team. There's been a lot of iterations of City where now it feels like they peaked at the right time. And now it doesn't feel like they're past it and slumping. It feels like they had to go through a little bit of heartache, sitting in second place of the league for a long time. So there wasn't quadruple pressure, right? edging games in the Champions League instead of outright dominating. But then when it came time to do it, they stole the show. Playing away in Madrid or in Bayern, decent. At home, demolishing. Demolishing, destroying teams. And then you look at that and you go, damn, City built a fortress at the Etihad where they just don't lose now. And now they're going to go into an objective final against a team where they're overwhelming favorites. And the City of old, what we have, what we're used to seeing with this team, is a side that when that pressure is on, they don't always turn it on. In the league, they do, because it's game after game after game. Yeah. But in actual cup competitions, they tend to fold in that sense because maybe the lights are too bright. Maybe they've never been here before. Maybe the talent can't supersede the pedigree. For the first time, it feels like the culmination of the pedigree. It feels like City actually deserved to be here. They didn't slim past everybody. They beat the brakes off the teams who are supposed to be in the same stratosphere as them, or even tiers above them within pedigree of the competition. And now they stand across from David in a final. A team who has earned their place, defends extraordinarily well, and in a final, probably have the most frustrating style for City, because we know what the game will look like. It's not going to look like a battle of possession or outclassing two sides. It's going to look like a team who defends with their lives, who's going to try to hurt the other in transition, and a team who is very used to that format, but now playing against a team who's also won two domestic cups. Like, who's won trophies doing this before?
I think
on the biggest hand, thing that City are overwhelming favorites and more talented. On the other hand, Inter should not be slept on.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think for City, the one thing that I can say is that City have not been overcomplicating it towards the end of the season.
Yeah,
and that's big, because how many times have we said City have lost the Champions League or whatever cup that they didn't win because of how overcomplicated they made it, and they didn't go ahead. Yeah, they didn't go ahead and just do the job and do what they know that they're good at. Watching that FA Cup yesterday, I don't think City played spectacularly well. I don't think United played spectacularly well. But it wasn't overcomplicated. We knew exactly what was going to happen, and we saw it come to fruition. It wasn't a blowout, and it wasn't overwhelming in the sense that the game ever got away from United or City. It was pretty even. But at the end of the day, the team that we thought was going to control possession, the team that we thought was going to have better substitutes and be able to, you know, change the game if they needed to, or if the momentum was shifting the other way, they were going to have all the, you know, all the skills and outlets that they needed, ended up using all those outlets and everything like that, and everything went to plan, and the result showed it, right? You know, it wasn't a blowout. 2-1 was the result. People were saying this could be a 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, and I agree. And other than the Gundogan shots, I think they were thinking about it like it was a three-pointer. Because if it was 3 points in the league and we could still have another game later on, or if there was a second leg, we probably would have seen that. But because it was a one-off and a final with another final on the horizon, I think Pep just decided, hey, let me do something that I haven't done for a while. Let me not overcomplicate it. Let me just play the exact same game plan that we need to. And is it fair to say that I didn't really see a threat from Haaland yesterday? Like, the threat was everything else. And the chances weren't really that big for either side. It just, they went out and they did what they needed to do. It was a professional performance, and that's been really big for, at least for, from the outside looking in, from what I've seen from City so far, and why I think it's so inevitable. I think in the past few seasons, there has been a chink in the armor or a tendency to overthink it. Now it just seems like everybody knows what needs to be done. Let's go out and do it. And there's a well-defined game plan that had to be defined in the middle of the season and has carried through to the inevitability of it in the end of the season leading up to this moment. And I think that if I can just wrap up this thought train here, I think everybody's looking at City saying that it's so inevitable, not because this team is miles better than any of the City teams that we've seen in previous years, but because they go out and do what's necessary of them to win, rather than try and, you know, complete 20 passes before they go in and create a chance, or rather than close an opposition down in 6 seconds, and all those little metrics that we know Pep looks out for, but is now willing to, you know, kind of sacrifice that a little bit just to be able to get to the goal. And I think how important do you think Haaland has been in that? Because I think once you have a target that maybe is not doesn't lend himself to the Pep style and the constant rotation and the constant passing lanes and everything like that. How do you think the inclusion of Haaland has changed Pep's thought process on how he can lead up to, you know, create chances in the third, in the final third?
Yeah, listen, there's a lot to unpack there. Like, starting with Haaland, I think part of Haaland's allure is damned if you do, damned if you don't for defenders. If we overcommit to Haaland, we have to forfeit space and or personnel for other City players, which opens up space for them to exploit. And we know when City have space, they will exploit it. Or yeah, alternatively, we only afford one person to Haaland, at which point Haaland gets the better of him and scores. So for a lot of teams, I think the battle, I'm glad that Pep has made them think that Haaland is the battle. Like, oh, we have to contain Haaland and then we're good. The problem is that's not necessarily true, right? Having an
overcommitment to Haaland. But it is, though. Like, you have to, you said it right. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think it's such an obvious threat that people are like, okay, well, let me try to contain Haaland. Let me double up on Haaland in whatever way that they do it. And teams have tried. But if you don't contain Haaland, he's going to find space. So it,
and that's just it. But that's part of what's so great about having it. You're right. Though, if you are prepared to sacrifice space in other areas of the pitch because you want to commit to Erling Haaland, City getting the W is the only thing that matters. So Erling Haaland on the pitch, people will be like, oh, he didn't score that game. He didn't do a whole lot. Did City win? Why did City win? Why was so-and-so open? Why was so-and-so not closed down quickly enough? Why did that cross go? Why was it a cutback instead of a cross into the thing? Like, when you start to look at his actual impact on space and on occupying bodies, you look at, oh, Haaland's presence doesn't just have to be goals every game. But by the way, if you forget that and you're like, oh, we'll just close the space and worry about, you know, City's 11 players, then Haaland's going to score. So to be honest, it's kind of a very, very nice system that isn't always incumbent on Haaland scoring for City to win. It's just Haaland playing because it gives the opposition so much to think about in terms of, do I have to get close to him or do I have to leave him to go mark other people? I really, really like that strategy. And I think a lot of people overlook that. And in the same way that people overlook what a final actually is, people are thinking it's going to be 3-4-5. No, that's not how finals work, bro.
No,
it isn't. That was never what's going to be. And on the note of overcomplicating things, you're right. Pep has been known to do that for years and years and years and years. And we've seen it for the last 7 years for City. We haven't seen it this year. Pep turned that page.
He did the same at Bayern, right? Like, so just so people can back off a little, it's not just him at City. Mm. Like, ever since he won the Champions League at Barcelona, he's been overthinking that competition. And he's had teams that have been way more than capable of winning it in both different clubs. So it's weird to me, and it's nice to see that he's finally maybe turned that switch. But anyway, I'll let you finish that point.
No, that's just it. It's that finally people are like, this is the best 11. Pep sees it. Pep's like, okay, let's go do it. Let's go win. Like, there's no surprise tactics. There's no anything else. I'd be shocked if the team is any different than it was in that FA Cup final, except for Ederson playing. Obviously, Ederson will be a net for the Champions League final. Otherwise, all the outfield players, I'd imagine, will be exactly the same for the Champions League final, because that's the lineup that has got us here. That's the lineup that beat Madrid. It's the lineup that beat Bayern. It's the lineup that has shown we can cope with this pressure. We know what we're doing. And if that, you know, in turn results in accolades, I think that goes a lot further than the you know, the prettiness of the ball. You know, it doesn't have to be as fluid as it was when we got 100 points, because now we got Haaland. Does Haaland look like Lukaku sometimes when he takes a touch or he's moving backwards on agility? Yeah, he does. He really looks clumsy. But if he's winning the ball and he's now dragged defenders into space that can be exploited, then it doesn't matter. Right? The optics be damned. I think that right now, City are looked at as overwhelming favorites because we don't know where they can bottle this. Like, how can City go wrong? How can City not get this done? Whereas in years past, it was City are like at the line or at the threshold. Oh, and they messed it up because the talent, but there was no overcomplication. There was this. They didn't have a striker. They didn't have something. Now people are looking at it like, it's got to be City because there's no tangible or obvious weakness in the squad. And I'd agree with that. But that being said, don't expect a blowout of a final. That's not how the finals work. It will be tight. It will be nervy. It will be competitive. And if it's 2-0, even 3-0, Joe said he thinks it's going to be 3-0. I still think that that's a pretty competitive result, because at one point, City will be able to, if they're up, and we'll knock on wood, if they're up by a lot and there's a little bit less time to play, I think City will maintain possession. I don't think they'll try to shut out unless the game is close and it's like 2-1. And they'll be like, just like it was yesterday, they'll go, okay, let's put on Laporte, let's put on Ake, let's put on all the defenders. We're going to make sure we have to see this one out. But even that shows the progress of what City are, because it's not like, okay, well, we're going to die by the system and keep going with all the possession and all the 20 passes and everything else leading up to goals. We just have to make sure we cross that line. It's the most certain I've been up to this point that we're going to, but I really, really don't like the optics of City are going to batter them because they're so much better than Inter, because I don't think that's how Champions League finals work.
So where do you get your hesitation then? Because if you're so confident and everybody else is that City's going to win this Champions League and you can't outline certain weaknesses in the team, where is the hesitation coming from? So I'm just going to push you a little bit on that.
You know, they never crossed that line before, right? Like, that's just so, and not to mention, there's
so two, is it
there's
mental? Two things.
It's partially mental because it's no, when you know that you can do something like City in the Prem, City winning the league, City win the league, because they know even if they're in second and their points off, they're like, no, we smell blood. We're going to go catch this. And it puts the pressure on. But City are the overwhelming favorites. And I think that you want to be the better side of the final. Don't get me wrong. But if the other team has nothing to lose because they're looked at as such underdogs, that is that spot where upsets tend to happen, right? Where it's like, this team doesn't have a chance. And then you go, oh, damn, what the hell happened? This is why we love this sport. I don't want that moment. I want to completely annihilate that moment. I want the game to be perceived as competitive so Man City see the challenge ahead of them so they know, okay, we must respect our opposition, but we can't afford them too much respect because we know we are better than them. There's a sweet spot wherein that lies. That's where I think City's mentality is right now. Without looking at it as a final, look at it as another game. Can we beat the team that's in front of us? Yes. Have City addressed the pedigree concerns that I had in years past? Yes, they have. But I haven't seen my team win the Champions League before. So I can't say, yeah, they're going to stomp them. They're going to steamroll them. I haven't seen this Inter squad win the Champions League in 13 years. None of these players are Champions League winners.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm like, yeah, but that badge has, right? True, that fan base has seen it before, right? This is a side that defends resolutely and who loves an upset. That's not the position. That's the position where we find ourselves. That's not a great position to be. I'd rather be the better side than a weaker one in a final, but to be overwhelming favorites, I don't think is ever to your benefit.
Did you have that same mentality going into the FA Cup final? Like, you knew you were going to win it, but was there any part of you where you were like, I don't want to be an overwhelming favorite in this either, because United have beaten us and we know that they have players that can win a moment in a one-off game? Or were you like, yeah, we're just going to win?
You know, strangely, I felt very similar ahead of the United game, but I actually felt like, and this might combat what I just mentioned about Inter, but I felt like the FA Cup final might be slightly more difficult as a game than the Champions League final will be, not because of the difference in pressure, but because of what's at stake. What's at stake for Inter is winning the treble against a team that they shouldn't be beating in a game, period. What's at stake in the FA Cup final was that Manchester United are the almost lone defenders. It's in their hands to decide, are we going to be the only team in the history of this country to have won a treble? Or as our city rivals, are we going to be the reason that our city rivals have that achievement as well? I could have seen that game going, United going balls to the wall, trying everything to know we have to at nothing else. Forget trying to win the FA Cup. We have to stop you from winning. We have to stop you from winning the next two games. I thought it was going to be more feisty. I thought it was going to be more firing. I thought it was going to be more cynical. I could have seen more injuries or more fights trying to rile up the City players and get under their skin, because it's like, we're what stands in front of you in a treble. Ultimately, like, Inter could be the cause of that, but it shouldn't get to that. We need to be the ones who stop that. And stopping somebody is a different thing than just trying to go for the same objective that they are, right? At that point, it's a race. Inter and Man City are in a race to see who can finish first in that competition, who's going to beat each other. But for United, you're the goalie there, right? You're like, you know, we have to stop you from doing this. And I was nervous that the implications of that game could be injuries. It could have been, you know, treble's not on if we don't win that game. And if Casemiro or some, I mean, not that he's a dirty player, but I mean, definitely a player who I could see wanting to preserve that achievement for the club he plays for. I could see him going to stomp somebody and being like, okay, what do I have to lose? Like, yeah, I'll be sent off. So what? Who cares? Who cares? I want you to not win. I don't care if I win. I need you to not win. That's a dangerous spot to be in, dude.
Do you know what, man? As a fan, I'll agree with you. But if I'm a player, I don't want that pressure. If I'm a player, I'm only focusing on, let me win another trophy. Because I've thought about this multiple times. And I think that maybe what Rashford may have been struggling with, because to your point, none of these players have won the treble. Like, the treble was in 1999. The manager's not from Manchester. The only guy that actually cares about stopping the treble is probably Marcus Rashford and whoever else has grown up through the academy. And I don't, like, we've seen players ingrain themselves in the club. You know, the likes of Bruno, Casemiro looks like he's loving it, and but he's already won everything, right? So I don't know if his mentality is going to be the same. So the only guy that's really actually there to stop the treble is probably Marcus Rashford. And before the game, anybody would have highlighted him as the main threat for Man United. And Kyle Walker kind of nullifies him on pace. So if anything else, it needs to be a bombardment of runs in behind where one of them pays off. And we didn't get the chance to do that because the people that were on the ball were not the guys that were sending in the ball in behind. And I think obviously City prepared for that. So if I'm a player, I'm not looking to, hey, let me go stop the treble, because first of all, I didn't win it. I don't know the guys that did. They're not around the club anymore. If they are, they just came for a visit and they probably gave us a word here and there. And that's almost kind of like something that's hanging over you as the pressure builds up. And I don't want that. Let me go take this as just another game. And we know that we can beat you on a one-off game, right? In two legs, 100% City's favor for that. City's favor for the one-off game anyway. But we've seen when United have had no chance to beat City in a one-off game, we've done it in the last few years.
Exactly.
Right? So we're capable of it. We did it this season. And I think if the players just went into that game thinking, listen, we've already beat these guys once in the season. In fact, it was the most recent game that these two teams have played. Let me just go take this as just another game. Don't let the pressure come on. And we've seen players talk about this in finals and when they go to the World Cup or whatever. The occasion kind of sometimes gets too big for them and the pressure becomes way too huge. So as a fan, you worry about that. You want to stop them more than winning the FA Cup, because the FA Cup is not going to make or break our season.
No.
Stopping it, yeah. But as a player, I don't want that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't, but the fans do. The fans, like, and that's just it. I feel like the fans, the supporters, the overwhelming majority of who represents the club is the fan base. And the fan base is like, yo, I don't want to see City have done this. But ultimately, that doesn't actually influence the Champions League final. It's just the framework for how we reached here. I like the way that City won that FA Cup yesterday. I love, and we're going to talk about it more when we get to like the keys to victory. But by the way, let's just pause for a second here. Ilkay Gundogan. Like, brother, even if that goal pains you, would you rather concede a shit goal or a banger in a final? I'm asking you personally.
You're talking about the first one?
I'm asking, would you rather
concede a banger, obviously. Like you,
that
you
was want... spectacular. That might be the best goal in the history of the FA Cup, period, let alone final. And it was after 12 seconds, dude. To hit a dipping volley from the top of the box, like, forget the stakes of what the game are. In a final against your City rivals, you know, for part two of three in the puzzle chase for the treble, Ilkay Gundogan hit that so sweet. And then to do it again on the other foot from the top of the box on the other side.
I think both goals could have been saved. I'm putting those on De Gea, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you know what the problem is with De Gea, bro? De Gea apparently loves to just sit and watch. Like any change in direction for De Gea, he's like, well, they got me. They got
if
me.
I'm
beat.
Seeing
if he's
De
favoring one
move,
side and it goes the other side, he
in.
Doesn't move.
Yeah. Exactly. If I see De Gea watching it as I do, I know what's going in, because it's
there's a few times that City missed it yesterday, like, that it looked like it was going to go in because he just went,
like Gundogan connected, but it wasn't top ins, it wasn't side netting, like it was gettable. I think it maybe like if I'm trying to give De Gea as much credit as I possibly can, City obviously caught us sleeping in the first 13 seconds of the game, but
it's a
one
in a million goal,
buddy,
picture
that's
perfect.
Savable. Like, come on. That is, I know it's a fast ball and everything, but at least try to go for it. Maybe get a finger on it. We know he's capable of that shot-stopping action. Maybe if it's like 5 minutes into the game, he's awake and he's ready for it, but I think he just was caught asleep.
Yo, honestly, he's thinking, what are you going to do? Score within the first 10 seconds of the game
literally,
with a dipping
like,
volley from
it.
The
and
top of the box?
Never like, got out of that headspace. And I think for the second goal, sure, you can see it late or whatever, but it's slow. It's bobbing up and down. It's so slow. He got a hand on it. What are you doing? Like, I think both of them were definitely savable for his standards. for the saves that he's capable of pulling out. So it's just so stupid. And I think, to your point, the second one was more of a shit goal than the first one. And the first one, I was like, well, you just caught us sleeping. And that was it. Like, so 100% you'd rather concede a banger rather than a shit goal in a final. Because then you can hold your hands up and go, like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, well, that's just it. Like, at least it was nice to watch, even if it sucked that, you know, it was against your team. Because that first goal, I think what happened with De Gea, he literally was just like, that's not going in.
And then he's like,
yeah. Fuck. And then for the second one, he dived. But yeah, that one was kind of a little bit more scrappy. But I think, I don't actually think that in the fault versus praise argument, we should actually be favoring De Gea. I think we have to favor Gundogan. Because the amount of times that goal takes place, the first goal, from kickoff, back to your keeper, up to a person who heads it, wins the battle, to a player who just pings it into the area, and then you catch that on the volley like that. That does never happen.
Credit to
for like, Gundogan to hit that the way he does is superlative. And then the second one, for him to be top of the box, backing up, just hit it on his left foot from the top of the box, and for it to just dip and bounce, and for everyone to miss it and for it to go in, I still think that deserves tremendous credit. Because we've seen a ton of times people attempt volleys and they're nowhere near. He could have whiffed it, could have hit a player, could have hit the wall.
What did I text you yesterday after the game? I was like, end of season Gundogan cannot be stopped. Like the last 15 games in a season, and I think Kyle Walker said this, he turns into Prime Zidane. And it's totally believable.
It basically is. Yeah, he's absolutely unstoppable.
He's the most clutch player towards the end of the season.
It's ridiculous how much he actually offers, and I hope that he stays. And anyway, I want to segue this into a little bit of what we're going to be talking about here. I want to get into the keys to victory, and we're going to come back to them. Do you want to start with City since we're on them, and then do Inter, or do you want to do Inter because they have less of a chance?
Let's do Inter first. We've spoken, I think, a bit about City. Now let's shift it to Inter.
Let's go back.
Yeah,
there's a few keys to victory that I've identified. There's a few key battles and what they have to do. It seems pretty rudimentary, but I think it shouldn't be understated. Playing to your strengths actually means in a final. For Inter, you have to just continue to defend the way that you have throughout this tournament. Inter's defense is criminally underrated because for whatever reason, people are just like, there's not a world beater there. We could probably get through. But the back three that they play with, alongside the midfield three that they play with Onana and Net, there's so little space to exploit. And City are the masters of exploiting space. But ultimately, when that starts to not go to plan and they can't stretch the defense and they start to lob in crosses, I probably favor the aerial battles for Inter. So if you're looking for how City are going to break them down, if Inter don't afford them a lot of space, it actually lends itself nicely for Inter in a final to be shutting teams out because it's going to be very, very hard for Man City to manipulate that space, especially when you consider how Man City do it. Are the flanks going to be available to attack for Man City? Probably. But going through the middle, like goals, how City tend to score with De Bruyne shooting from the top of the box, with Gundogan shooting from the top of the box, with Haaland trying to run into space, those are not going to be there, which means the way that Mahrez, if he's the one who starts, which I doubt it, or Foden, the one who probably won't start, like your best dribblers, your twinkly, flashy type players, the way that they'll be able to exploit the wide areas are probably not even going to be the ones who start, makes me wonder how City are going to penetrate those areas because we see City score all the time. It seems inevitable. But what we may not watch, if you're not as familiar with Inter, is that Inter very rarely concede. They do. There's implosions. There's moments that things don't go right. But in the Champions League, they've proven they're not conceding goals very often. The only times they have is when they're going for it a little bit more, and I don't see them trying to do that in a Champions League final against Man City. That's my first key to victory for Inter.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Inter are going to be narrow and deep, and those are kind of like trying to unlock that is not impossible for City, but it makes it more difficult than a team that's trying to play wide and a team that's trying to stretch out.
Especially because they're very good. Like this can't be understood. City play against a lot of low blocks, but the low blocks are usually teams who just can't offer more. Inter are a very, very good team. So when you have this low block system met with players who are actually very, very talented, there's a lot of work to be done for City here. It's not as easy as everybody thinks to just attack, you know, into a team that's also going to be attacking them. It leads to the next key to victory for Inter, which is to attack extremely wide. Now, this is equal parts because they cannot break the narrowness of their shape when defending, but also who their wide players are, right? Their wide players, especially you look at like Dumfries and whatever else, mm-hmm. tends to be the focal point of attack that way, but it's not like he's bombing all the time. He's basically a forward. So they're going left side heavy to go up the pitch to then cross it in. Lautaro's a monster who's got a lot of goals.
Yeah, this ain't this Argentina season. Lautaro. This is no, Inter this Milan is, Lautaro.
He's a different beast. Edin Dzeko running from the halfway line, they're looking for outlets and pace for transition, that's not what he's going to do. But will Edin Dzeko be able to hold up play? Absolutely he will. That's his bread and butter. He's going to be able to do that all day.
He's an inside agent.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder. He's kind of a little bit.
I think for him, he's like, yeah, you know what, guys? Maybe give me a medal, okay? Throw me one. He's one of our own.
Hey, maybe bro. You know that meme of like him walking back into the dressing room after the to collect his medal. I think Sheikh Mansour might be transferring 25 M's tonight.
I wonder, because I mean, for him, he said like, you know, so glad that these two teams are in the final. As a 37-year-old, that's a pretty sick career to win it as a starter, as a 37-year-old in Inter, if he's able to do that. But he actually is going to be extremely important to how Inter defend, because if they are lobbing up balls trying to clear them, he will be the one who wins it and then goes wide. So playing off of that, that's where Lautaro comes in, and he can use his pace to try to move forward a little bit. Then you have your fullbacks who are going to come into play, who are very, very attack-minded, or I guess wingbacks, not really fullbacks, because they're all the way up the pitch all the time. They have to attack City extremely wide. City will have answers to that. Don't get me wrong. Like, City will be anticipating that and trying to deal with it wherever possible. But if you're Inter, it makes way more sense to do that than trying to play through City, because that's where errors are made. So if you're able to exploit those areas when City are overcommitting and there's 5, 6, 7 players forward for City, that's where Inter will have a real, I think, respectable chance to score. How often they use those outlets, I don't know. But those should be the primary usages for their attack, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Dumfries is definitely going to be an outlet there. And it'd be interesting to see if Pep goes in with a back four again and puts Nathan Ake on him just to be able to, you know, keep track of him.
Pep's going to play exactly the same system that he tends to. He's going to play Akanji at left back, I think, in a back three with Stones dropping in when necessary. I don't think anything changes for this final and how City are playing. I don't even think it'll be Ake, though Ake's spectacular. I feel like he's
Akanji's got the tools to deal with it, but
and he's been outstanding.
It would be really interesting to me to see how wide Inter go, because that's going to be a really big question. Because I think City understand that you need to try to stretch this team a little bit so you can find some gaps in. And Inter are going to try to find that perfect balance that Chelsea did in the Champions League final, where they play really narrow, but they're able to switch it out wide so effectively. And if they can do that, then maybe they can get a similar result that Chelsea did. And it's interesting to me that even after the tinkering that Pep's done in the team, that's still an outlet that can be used against you guys. It's still a way that you can try to employ to try to score against City. So even though that it's a completely different system.
The last way that I have for a keys to victory, I think that City are atrocious on set pieces, not necessarily for defending, but for attacking. They make no use of them. They make no use out of their attacking set pieces. Almost at, like, okay, the Gundo goal yesterday, but I mean for in-swinging headers or from corners or anything like that, they just don't do anything with them. I think that if Inter have the opportunity to make use of their set pieces, they're a physically bigger team than we are. So if they have corners and whatnot, listen, City are not spectacular at defending set pieces, nor are they at attacking set pieces. I think that's a huge weakness.
I thought 9 Lautaro coming in back post.
Well, I'm more worried about 6'4" Edin Dzeko coming in back post, who's apparently unmarked, like Varane was yesterday when he could have scored and he skewered it wide, right? Like, if you're good with set pieces, City can be got at there, because they're just not. They're not great with it. And Inter have some big, big boys in their team who can jump and get the ball. It seems rudimentary as a tactic, but we've seen it work. We've seen worse opposition have success with this against Man City before. Inter have very good chances to play into Man City's weaknesses here. And if they do,
and Inter actually utilize their set pieces. Like, they've got a lot of them down.
Yeah. Why not? Like, if you can win corners, bro, like, that's very good.
Someone like Stefan De Vrij is going to be, you know, going to be looking in to try to make it a little bit dirty in there.
All of them, bro. Bastoni, 6'3", Skriniar is massive. Yeah. Dumfries is a big dude. Like, all they got big players throughout the team. I think that they have.
I mean, not to forget about Lukaku if he comes on later on.
But well, he can't head a damn thing.
He's no, he can't. But right? I mean, he's a presence.
He is a presence. He's a big physical guy. But those are my keys to victory for Inter. Do you have any more, or do you think those are pretty decent ones that we covered so far?
No, I really don't. I really think tactically that's all they got going on for them. And the rest will just be about mentality and try to, you know, not suffocate, but try to piss the City team off, not let them play their game. And that might be like, just get under their skin. I think that might be a way that they can do it. And it's the dark arts of football, kind of maybe chat to Diego Simeone a little bit before you go. but I think if you get under someone like Jack Grealish's skin, if you just leave a little bit more on De Bruyne, maybe you don't let him get as comfortable as he wants. Like Bernardo is going to shift too easily. Yeah. Barella, I think Bernardo is going to be able to shift City's a little bit. Back.
Yeah.
And Gundogan's going to be able to shift a little bit. So there's certain players that you can try to go piss off a little bit, but say you've got enough to maybe change that up if Pep sees that that's happening. But
yeah.
That's the only other way that I think that Inter's going to try to win here.
The avenue for City to succeed, I think the number one point that I can make for Man City is get out of your own way.
Yeah.
Don't get ahead of yourself thinking this is a final, this is the treble, we have to do it, we have to get this done. Brother, get out of your own way. City have the better players, they're a better team. And it segues into the next point, which is literally like point 1A and 1B. Think of it as any other game.
Yeah, just play
in a league. Do Man City beat Inter? Probably. More often than not. I think City probably beat Inter at least 7 times out of 10, mm-hmm. probably. Right? In most circumstances. That even if that's high, that might even be high to discredit Inter. But I think probably City, the perception is that City would beat them way more often than not. They have to get out of their own way. They can't think of this as, and that includes Pep. That includes the lineup. That includes the players. The pressure of winning the treble, I think, is not even where they're at. It's the pressure of winning the Champions League. This is what it's been all about. The treble happens to be on. They've already won the other two, but I actually think the treble has very, very little to do with the job that's ahead. Because City are not gunning for the treble. They're gunning to win the Champions League for the first time. That is what's at stake for Man City here. And I think if they're able to, you know, shift that mentality from saying like, oh, this is it, this is it, this is it, to just being like, let's go win a football game, because we do that all the time. City can win, and they will win, because they'll find a way, as they tend to. They're inevitable, and they have better players.
Yeah, if they just play the game, they win. And that's it. That's the top and bottom of it. We can give as much credit as we want to Inter, and it's something that we should do, because it's not as, you know, done for as we think it is, because Inter still have a stake in this game, and there's two teams that are playing this match, and sometimes the momentum will swing. But at the end of the day, if City play their game, they're going to win. And that was the same thing that we said about Real Madrid. If City can get over the hurdle that this is Real Madrid in the Champions League, they can win the match, because this is not the best Madrid side that we've seen. The only time that we think Madrid are going to turn them over is if they somehow smell blood and they end up going to be who they are in this competition. But City played their game and they won. It was the same thing that we said about Bayern. These are two teams that would probably beat Inter as well. So
yeah,
Inter is not the team, you know, that's like a unstoppable object versus the immovable force. This is a very stoppable object versus an immovable force. But
this is an object that won't move versus that's just it. They're gonna sit there. Like, they're literally an immovable object, because they're not going to move. Unstoppable force is Man City. That's almost exactly what the expression is. They're an immovable object because they're just gonna sit there.
They're just gonna sit there and just
And City are that unstoppable force. We're going to be running at them, trying to break down that wall. Whether or not it happens is great, because that it might be a little bit too much credit to Inter, but largely that's what they are. They're just an immovable force. That's how they're chilling, man.
That's a good way of putting it.
Right?
Yeah, like, literally, play the game, you win the match. That's it. Don't play the occasion.
Don't play the occasion. It's very, very well said. The last key to victory for City is the big game players have to turn up. Bernardo Silva against Bayern Munich and against Real Madrid was unbelievable. Like, echoing my shout, I think that Bernardo's just the best in the world. I think Bernardo Silva can do what nobody else can do. And there are players who can do things that he can't. Don't get me wrong. But I think Bernardo is just the ultimate competitor with a skill set that just you do not see in football. The silk along with the tenacity doesn't exist, and he brings it, and he tends to show up in big, big games. Ilkay Gundogan towards the end of the season is so clutch when it comes to output. Bernardo doesn't always have to be involved for output, but for just making things happen, he does. Gundogan is scoring the fastest goal in the history of the FA Cup history final because he's scoring dipping volleys from the top of the box. Blame the keeper as much as you want. He still did that twice. You know what I mean? So, and then last season, he's the reason that we won it, putting it back post to put us ahead of Liverpool in the final game of the season. He feels those big occasions. He shows up for them and he gets on the score sheet. And I think he has to continue to do that. Kevin De Bruyne, this is it, bro. This is everything for you. This is your time. This is it for Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne has to produce the way that we expect him to, because you know what? All eyes are on Gundogan yesterday. Who got both assists? Kev.
Yeah.
Kev's a master at creating that output and making sure that others can score. Kev continues to do that. He'll have less space than usual. You just got to figure it out. Relying on the big game players who are monsters. And by the way, City have lots of them. Kyle Walker, don't get overrun, because we know that you are literally the fastest player in the Premier League at 33 years old, running 37 kilometers
an hour. Ruben Dias
plays. Ruben Dias doesn't get beat almost ever.
Yep.
John Stone's been immaculate in midfield. Rodri's the linchpin of the whole system. There's a lot of players who have to turn up for Man City. And when they do, it really is that City are just unstoppable, because no one can compete with how well they play and what they're able to do. And when you add the mentality to it as well, it seems like it's a wrap. It's like, this is all we got to do. The big game players need to turn up, and they need to just play the match and not the occasion. If that happens, bro, not only is the Champions League won, but the treble is complete
as well. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think literally if City play their game, they'll win the match. And that's the top and bottom of it.
I think there's still questions about the ramifications of this final, though. And I want to ask you a few of those before we wrap here, because we're getting towards the end here. I don't want to stretch too long on just focusing on one game. You know, we might leave some of the more topical current events about how appealing Saudi Arabia is until next week or next time on the jersey wall. But boy, oh boy, are there things happening. If we're staying just on the note of these two clubs, tell me about how successful this season is for City if they don't win the Champions League. Is this just another one of City seasons, or is it now it's a failure because they missed out on the treble and crossing that line to win the Champions League?
I think people will look at it as a failure because it seemed like it was do or die, now or never in the Champions League. But we've said that as well. Yep. When they reached the Champions League final against Chelsea, we said that when they got knocked out. It seems inevitable that it's do or die, and it doesn't look like Pep's going anywhere. So he's gonna get another chance to go at it again. But this is probably the easiest competition that you can have in a final, right? Like, you know, probably easier than the Chelsea game.
Stylistically difficult, but in terms
in terms of
juggernaut, you know, opposition.
Probably. Yeah,
yeah.
I think this might, like, if you had to in the beginning of the season say, "Hey, you're gonna reach a Champions League final. Do you want Madrid, Bayern, Inter, or fucking, I don't know, AC Milan?" You probably would have picked Inter in the final. You know what I mean? Like, if you had your choice between them.
I would have picked AC Milan, to be honest. But
sure, but it one of
but ahead of some other juggernauts. Yeah, I would have said, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have put Inter into the tier of...
At the beginning of the season, with AC Milan having won the Scudetto and everything, I think you probably would have went either AC Milan or Inter Milan, right? Because nobody thought, even at the group stage with them, like we all thought that they were going to get out. So, I just think that this is probably do or die for you. Not to say that it would have been a failure, because if a failure of a season is picking up a domestic double, then, you know, I want to fail.
totally. I want to win the Prem.
It's like Bayern. Like, everybody's looking at Bayern saying how much they failed this season. Buddy, they won the league. Like, what are you for the 11th time in a row? Like, chill.
on a bad season.
Yeah, Barca failed in Europe. Cool, but they won the La Liga. Just people need to stop and get off Twitter a little bit and understand
you like, saw it seems normal
twice.
That City,
that's it.
City are on the cusp of a treble, and it just seems normal. Like, yeah, they should. Like, no, they shouldn't be. I don't care how fucking good they are. That's not what the norm is.
The reason the treble has not been done is because it's a very difficult thing to do. That's the reason it has not been done in 24 years. And the amount of good teams that we've seen come and go, including in United, like the 2008 team, narrowly lost out on the FA Cup. And that's the reason we haven't been able to see another treble since 1999, right? So if this gets done,
when we existed,
it's special
in our lifetime, Mina. That's like our lives.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? In our lifetime, we've only seen it done once in England, once in Italy, once in Portugal, and fucking twice in Barcelona. Just yeah. In Barcelona, not even in Spain, just in Barcelona. No,
exactly. They figured it out.
And once in Germany. So it takes something really special for it to happen. You need a little bit of luck. I don't care what anyone says. You can be some of the best teams in the planet. You still need a little bit of sprinkling of luck. That's what happened with us in 99. Narrowly lost out on it in 2008. And if it doesn't happen, then it doesn't happen. So you're still going to be searching for that Champions League. It's going to come in anyway. Like, I think it's inevitable that City's going to end up winning a Champions League now or later, but it's going to happen.
Right. That actually segues into the next question, which is because Joe is very big on this is it for City, right? Like, if they don't win, then they have to blow it up. I disagree with that. I wish Joe was here to argue that, like, now, if he still feels that way. But do you feel like it's now or never for City? Because, like, if City lose some of their big game players, which they're speculated to anyway in the summer, with Bernardo, with Gundogan, if he ends up leaving, like, is this a one-off for a while, or are they here now no matter what? Like, City are going to be within the Champions League final discussion properly every year. Because I'll tell you what, bro, if they lose some of those big game players, I can't tell you for sure that they're going to be back here. Oh, yeah, every single year City are a Champions League semifinalist minimum. Talent-wise, maybe. But what does the team look like?
Yeah,
if the team now changes completely because their best players are leaving, you know what I mean? Like, it's tough to say, oh, yeah, they're here. I don't know if it's now or never, but it does kind of deserve
a feels like it a little bit.
A little bit. Like if we end up, it feels like maybe not now or never, but like this core, this is the chance for that's this what I'm core.
Saying. Yeah. I think the club will be back. This team might not be. Like, you know what I mean? This set of players, it feels like the culmination of a project for these set of players, or at least the core. You're looking at, you know, someone like De Bruyne, for example. Yeah. Gundogan, especially those kinds of players. But I think the club is in this conversation now. Like, City's in this conversation for until you know,
they've entered tier one, like tier one of if they, especially if they win, right? If they win,
if they don't win it, they're on the cusp. And the, like, if City are back in a Champions League final again before, like, if they don't win this one, it wouldn't be a surprise. It's not like City don't belong in this stage. They belong in this stage now. They belong to be part of the conversation. Whether they win it or not, it's going to happen eventually. I don't think this is a one-off like the Spurs final or even you know, anything like that. I think just like Liverpool finished in a couple Champions League finals and they won it in 2019, they had been there in stage before and after. I think City are just in this conversation. And maybe if it's now or never for this core of the team, it's not now or never for the club.
Right. And to be fair, I shouldn't tie so much of the core with two players, but I mean, like, Bernardo and Gundo are this part of the spine of the team. So I think that it is part of the core.
De Bruyne, yeah.
Because I think, well, even De Bruyne, I don't think leaves this year. Like, right. I think De Bruyne will be there probably for the next two or three seasons. But if Gundo and De Bruyne leave, I guess it's still the same core if we replace those players, but I don't know if those players, you know, have the same impact on the squad to get back here. So it feels like it's a lot to weigh on two players, but those are arguably City's two best players, right? They have two very, very unique skill sets when it comes to doing it. And if City win the competition, bro, I would have told you if Joao Cancelo and Raheem Sterling were still in this team, that's a very different side than it is currently. You know what I mean? Aymeric Laporte was in the team for a long time. Now he's not. Like, it moves very, very fast. And I don't know what kind of move City will make to accommodate here. I actually hope that everybody just stays. I don't want a rebuild. I don't want to blow it up. I don't want new players. I want Gundo to stay. I want Bernardo to stay for as long as humanly possible. Because, I mean, as we can see, it's going pretty well.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
It's going pretty well with them there. How concerned are you that Pep's going to complicate this? Because, and if he does, does that do for his legacy? Because I don't think he will either. But I think he learned from his mistakes. Previous Champions League final either. Yeah, you just hope so. Right? You hope you learn from your mistakes, right?
He learned from his mistakes against Madrid. And now I think he's going to learn his mistakes from the last Champions League final that he was in. And I think he recognizes that, you know, he tends to overthink it sometimes. Just play the game again. Just go out and do what you've been doing, what's led you to this moment, and I think that's going to be it.
All right, there you go. I think that it should be the same thing. I think the FA Cup lineup was very telling. Like, he just played the strongest 11.
Are you that? How long do you think Pep stays? Win or lose?
Probably
he's not going to get sacked. If no, he leaves, he'll never get he sacked. Leaves It'll because be, it's because it's him.
He will leave when he wants to. I think not while City are still under the investigations for whatever for the things, because he said I'm not leaving
that could
while
be that is 10 still years.
Disputed. I don't know. He called for it to be fast. He said I'm not going to leave this club in the midst of thing. I think that Pep probably stays for two more seasons minimum. Yeah. Afterwards, I don't know at what point he wants to walk. I think that the problem is, like, if you're Ilkay Gundogan and you're the captain, and you're thinking about leaving. Kind of the time to go is after a treble, right? You kind of walk out like, guys, we did it all. Take care. Like, I signed off. I salute you as leaving. Whereas Pep has for sure said I'm not leaving next season, and he'll never get sacked, right? So I think minimum two more years, but I think we can't look past that for right now, because Pep at one point probably wouldn't have said, oh yeah, I'll be in Manchester for 7 years. Probably, mm-hmm. you know, it was very unlikely at the time. Let's see. I don't know when that scandal will take place. I don't think it'll be 10 years. I think within the next 2 years, they should have a pretty, you know, a decision made as to whether or not City are guilty of anything. But I don't think that Pep wants to leave the club high and dry and just be like, oh yeah, look what they did. It's like, no, we won everything that we won on the pitch. Corruption, everything else, emails, whatever you want to be upset about. What was accomplished on the pitch by this group of players, and this group of players had nothing to do with whatever you're upset with at the club. So I think I believe him when he says that. Sure. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was, if City win the treble, where do they rank amongst the best sides in history?
Definitely in the conversation.
Definitely. Where in the conversation? Like, how much of an argument do you have to say this Man City team is the greatest football team ever assembled? Because it'll age. And
you'd have to wait to see when they retire and where I agree, this ends.
For right now, like, if we're looking at it as like a current active squad versus all the legendary ones that we've seen, do they beat? How many of them do they beat? How many of them do we rate their achievements more?
I don't like how the teams would fare. I don't like the arguments of how the teams would fare if they play against each other. But if you're looking at accomplishments, the accomplishment is up there with the biggest accomplishment that's ever been done. You know, three-peating the Prem and winning the treble. That's what we did, and that is the biggest accomplishment in England. So it would at least be top three. You know,
right.
It would definitely be, you know, United treble, City treble. I don't really like to rate Arsenal Invincibles as much as they do, because they lost a hell of a lot of times in that season. And as you know, you can't take this season out of context. You can't take the Premier League out of context, because it exists within the timeline that the Champions League and the FA Cup are happening. So yes, Invincible season is a big accomplishment, but if you're going to put it up against treble winners, it's not going to be, even against double winners like with us in 08 or Chelsea's Champions League wins. I've struggled to put that
seasons,
higher
not
up.
Prem seasons. Yeah,
exactly.
Like it's different conversation.
It's the season overall.
So
yeah, it probably would be, if people don't have it in the top five, they're laughing. And that's just an
probably crazy.
If you're talking about Europe,
I'd say top five. And then as it ages, we can probably see like, oh wow. Yeah.
That if you're talking about Europe, you're in the conversation with United, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Inter and Porto, right? So
yeah,
those are the treble winners.
It's an elite, some elite company, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What percentage of a chance do you give either side to win the final?
I'm going 80% for City.
80-20? 80-20. So Inter have a 20% chance of winning?
Yeah. And I think that might be generous.
Really? I would say I mean, not by a whole lot, but I'd say I would go probably 70-30. Just because, like I said earlier, I think City probably went 7 games out of 10. But even that seems disrespectful.
I'm going just on a one-off. City have an 80% chance of winning. But
all right,
we'll see.
And so I guess that ties into your final statement on today's episode of the Jerseywall Podcast. Mina, what's your prediction for the final?
I'm going 3-1. Not as a blowout as Joe predicted, but I think Inter could probably score. I'm going 3-1.
I think I'm going to go
more reserved.
2-0.
All right, well, two goal lead. That's fine.
But and this is just it, because both sides are very good at not conceding. But I think Inter are very good at not conceding, so City won't score a lot. I think they'll score one, and then I think Inter are going to have to come play, and then City will get another one. But I think that'll be it. And to be honest, I could totally see City conceding. This could be 2-1 as well. But like that seems a little bit competitive for what people would probably assume this game to be. I promise this game will be competitive. If nothing else, I can almost guarantee this will be a competitive match of football that takes place on Saturday. Today we recorded this about a week before the final. I'm really, really excited about it. Guys, that's got to wrap up episode number 197 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. Brethren, thank you for joining me.
Thanks again, man. Appreciate it. It's going to be exciting watching that match.
You like my poem?
I loved it. It was really good. The validation, considering the time that it took to write it. No, it was great.
It was a more condensed one, but I still think I had some pretty good lines in there. I'm excited.
Yeah, you did.
Don't forget, on TJW 200, episode I'm assigning 200. All the onus is on you and Joe to go. I'm going to send you all my poems. I'm like, yo, find me my best lines. And I want you to just present to me what your favorite bars ever said it are. Does any from today make it in? I don't actually know, but I think this one was fun nonetheless. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in each and every week to the Jersey Wall Podcast. We absolutely love you. As always, I've been your host, Mr. Nathan Santos, and I had Mina with me, brother, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks again, man. Chat to you soon.
Chat with you soon. Follow the Jersey Wall on our socials in the link within the description. We love you, and we'll see you next time right here on the Jersey Wall Podcast, baby.